One of the things that kind of occurred to me in watching this movie.
What made noise? Everything is silent.
Ding. That's the sound of things occurring to me. What's up? This is Movies on Up. Be careful what you search for. I'm not looking for anything. Because I've already found it. It's the best co-host I could possibly wish for.
Queen of the flowers, or whatever you want to call me.
The May Queen. The May King, Mr. Dave Becella. That's Dave. I'm Ryan. We are Movies on Up. Be careful what you search for is our tagline for this episode. If you think you know what movie that comes from, you can send your guest to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guests on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet your guest to us @moviesonup on the Twitter. If you are correct and we choose you, your search for a Movies on Up prize package will end. It'll be delivered to you. This week, we are delivering an episode of one of, I don't know if it's necessarily one of our favorite horror movies from this year. Ari Aster's Hereditary made a big impact on us from just last year, was it? Was it 2 years ago?
It was last year, I think.
Yeah. Wow. His follow-up, Midsummer, came out this year on the 3rd of July, and it makes an impact, a similar impact to Hereditary. It was one of the movies that I remember being very excited about this summer. I loved that movie so much. I was really excited to see what he would bring to the table for his second movie. And that cast, Jack Rayner, Will Poulter, both guys I like a lot, and Florence Pugh, a lady we're learning to like an
awful
lot.
I'm a trailer guy. Like, I like trailers. I'm big on trailers. And it's rare that there'll be a movie where it's like, I don't want to know anything about it. Midsummer was one of those, because I feel like...
you didn't want to know anything.
Yes, because I feel like Hereditary, I barely knew anything going into it.
Pretty good trailer for Hereditary.
Yeah, you still didn't really know anything about it.
Yes.
So I wanted to know nothing going in, and I didn't know until closer that it was Florence Pugh, who I was growing to like. I only saw Will Poulter do press for it, like, the week of, so I knew, like, 2 or 3 days before that Will Poulter was in it. I didn't know Jack Rayner was in it until he shows up on screen. So it's one of those movies that was a pleasant surprise, because I like Rayner. I love Poulter. I like Florence Pugh. I'm glad I went in. Not that you really get... I mean, the plot, they go with a friend to Sweden to their summer festival.
Yeah.
That's really all you know. That's really all the trailer really says. And I don't think not knowing that spoils anything, but it is one of those I'm glad I went blind, and at least... in this part of Ari Aster's career where he's making what he wants to make and they're letting him, I want to keep taking that approach.
This year specifically, we've had Ari Aster, Midsummer. We're getting Eggers, The Lighthouse. He was the guy that did The Witch. Yeah. One of the hallmarks that both of those directors have is the fact that they're not afraid to slow burn things.
Even Us. You could put Jordan Peele in that same.
Yeah, that's true. Those are all guys that, again, we're relatively early into their filmmaking careers, and just the fact that they're going to do a follow-up, I don't need to see. You hooked me on the first one. I'll give you a second one, no questions asked, before I'll start having
until they give me a Swept Away, that's where I'm at. The guy that made Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, I'm going to see whatever you make. If that second movie is Snatch, I'm going to see everything you make until... you know, so it's
supposedly he's coming back to his roots too.
Oh, the Gentleman trailer just came out today.
Exactly.
It looks like he...
weird that you bring that up.
Yeah, because I was thinking it's like, oh, he's watched some of his protege Matthew Vaughn movies and he's getting back to it. But yeah, they're in that phase to where Hereditary was so good, I will just blindly see what he does next. Get Out was so good. I was amped for Us. I wasn't as much about the Vivitch as everybody else. So, I mean, I'm not as nuts about The Lighthouse. I'll watch it. Ari Aster is one of those where I'll see it.
And a few people saw it. I mean, for the kind of movie that it was, a horror movie coming out in the middle of summer, July 3rd, it debuted to $6.5 million domestically, which was good for sixth place. Your top five that week was Spider-Man: Far From Home, Toy Story 4, Yesterday, Annabelle Comes Home, and Aladdin. You had a couple...
tent poles.
Yeah.
Three Disney movies in the top five there.
Right, counting Spider-Man, Toy Story, and a horror sequel. So it's certainly a tough road to hoe for a slow burn, not really sure what it is.
Without
recognizable star power. Stars.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we love Will Poulter. We love Jack Rayner. We love Florence Pugh. They're far from recognizable to the
average.
It's not
Tom Hanks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not Tom Cruise or.
No Toms.
No. Not even Tom Hardy.
No. Or fake ass Tom Hardy. Midsommar went on to gross $27.4 million.
Right above Mission to Moscow.
Which is good for 2,878th place on the all-time list. It sits one spot below this 1990 Matthew Modine, Eric Stoltz jam about a WWII bomber crew.
Oh, that I know. I don't know the name of it. I know it's the ladies on the plane. I know the name.
Yeah. You might even
Memphis
say she's
Belle?
A Belle.
Memphis Belle.
Belle.
Yeah.
That is correct. One spot below Midsommar is a 1985 movie where Rosanna Arquette is mistaken for Madonna. This is in your wheelhouse, I kind of feel like. At least the time frame is.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Desperately Seeking Susan.
Oh, yeah. See, I didn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
wasn't, fair enough.
Yeah, I wasn't a big Madonna fan.
Yeah, it's not really a genre flick for you, but I thought in 85, that's solid in the Dave's maybe has seen this.
It's one of those I recognize the name, but yeah.
$27 million is right about the total for a couple horror sequels. Saw 4, Sinister 2. But what I find even more interesting than that is this number 9 that you can't help but talk about with Midsommar. If you divide 27 by 3, that's what you get, 9. I found a Reddit thread from user throwaway sziggit987. Apologies if I butchered your name. I'm doing the best I can, which I contributed to, so I suppose it's okay to mention. This idea of 9, and it's not unusual for movies to have a motif, whether it's a visual motif or even a numerical one like this. Midsommar, it's really there for you if you care to look. The festival itself, 9 days long. It's on a 90-year cycle, so once every 90 years they do this. There are 4 stages of life in the village, and those 4 stages of life are 18, 36, 54, 72, spring, summer, fall, and winter. All of those numbers are multiples of 9, and if you add the digits in each number, 1 and 8, you get 9, 3 and 6, you get 9, 5 and 4, 9, 7 and 2, also 9. Dave, you want to guess, if you don't remember, how old do you think she turned in this movie?
They're in college.
They're like, in college.
Not 27.
You would be correct.
Oh, was it 27? Oh, because they're late. Yeah, late in college.
Yeah, they're PhD students. 2 plus 7 is 9. And specifically, the summer season goes from 18 to 36, the exact midpoint or the midsummer point in that season would be 27. And the most sinister of all the number 9s in this movie, if you count up the letters in Midsommar, there are 9.
In my head, I'm counting their friend and then Florence Pugh, Jack Rayner, Will Poulter, Chidi. That's 5. And then I was trying to think the brother that they meet.
Mm-hmm.
That's 6, but he was only with 2 people, so that's 8. I was trying to see if the...
How many sacrifices there
if
were?
If the new people introduced coming with them added to 9, but that's only 8, so...
They probably add to a little bit more than 9.
Well, I meant in the ones we met, yeah. The couple were... They were by themselves. They didn't have a third with them.
No. While we were on numbers, we usually talk box office, which is very numbers-driven. That very much kind of spoke to me, so I thought I would put that in there. We talked a lot about the director, Ari Aster, and how much we liked Hereditary. I did feel that this was very much a spiritual sequel, gets mentioned a lot.
A companion piece.
Yeah.
Like, you have some directors to where it feels like, not necessarily that they exist in the same universe, but like you look at Edgar Wright with the Cornetto trilogy when he came out with Shaun of the Dead. It's hard to think of Shaun of the Dead without Hot Fuzz. It's not a sequel to it. They're companions
to each
other. And
it's not just because it's Peg and Frost.
Yeah, it's just they're very thematically and how they're written and even World's End. That's a trilogy. It's not Shaun of the Dead 1, 2, and 3. Right. This isn't Hereditary 2, but it's very much a companion piece. I won't say a sequel. I won't even say the Aster Cinematic Universe, the ACU. And you get that from some of these directors. Like, I mean, screw it. I'll keep going back to that. Snatch is very much a companion piece to Lockstock. They're very similar but different movies. And I feel like as far as spiritual sequels and companion pieces go, I feel like this is one of the further out there, like as far as differences go. You know, Hereditary was very dark,
color-wise,
very dark, and life is miserable and blue and gloomy. This is a very bright, very upbeat, there's a lot to live for kind of movie.
It's a celebration of life.
Yes.
With a lot of death.
A little bit of death.
A sprinkling, a smattering of death, so to speak. In order to have these movies that feel like they go in the same universe, the way you do that is you have a director that's very much into style. Hereditary, I did find scary. I don't know that I found Midsommar to be scary as much as I found it unsettling.
Unsettling is the first word that comes to mind, even for Hereditary. Like, I guess Hereditary did have its scares.
Yes.
But I feel overall unsettling is more appropriate. So that would be the first word that would come to mind to both of these. Because Midsommar is not a scary movie.
No.
It's a horror movie, yes. 100%, but it's not a scary movie. It's unnerving, unsettling.
But both of his movies kind of fall into that. One of the things we mentioned when we talk about just how creative and wonderfully framed his shots are, that's still the case in Midsommar. And using a brighter color palette makes him at least more visually appealing to look at for me.
Because I think Hereditary is one of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen. Hereditary looks-wise, cinematography, framing, shots, it's one of the most beautiful movies of
the last...
Yes, of the last 10 to 15 years. It's a masterfully directed and shot movie. Midsommar looks great, too. I don't feel it's as beautiful of a movie, which is odd because this is the bright one with the colors and stuff. It's still very masterfully made, but I feel like there was less impressive camera shots and stuff as there was in Hereditary. But that's not to take away from Midsommar. That's more how impressed I was with Hereditary.
I think some of the motion, the way he moved the camera in Hereditary was a lot more impressive than Midsommar. I think Midsommar was more, I'm going to set the camera here and I'm going to let the color palette.
Yeah. And a lot of that is there was more movement in Midsommar, I think, than in Hereditary. You're doing cool stuff moving the camera on pretty still shots. Whereas
because you're confined for the most part.
Whereas Midsommar, you have this dance off, you have this big open field that people are moving through. So he didn't get fancy. And it's almost like we do a lot of they got their own way or they overshot it, they overdid it. He stepped back. He still made this beautiful movie that's still wonderfully shot, but he didn't have to get as creative with the shots. He didn't have to shoot it as beautifully to still make it as visually appealing. A lot of that was because of the action, and a lot of it was the color. So he found a way to do the same thing while toning it back a little bit, which I think is very, very impressive for a director who, it's their second major feature, and at this point, you'd think they kind of want to show off. He did dial it back. I think that's very, very impressive, and it worked.
And another bit of restraint I think he showed, Midsommar is not in a hurry at any point. Hereditary and Midsommar both take their time. You could fall into temptation to just rushing to scare the shit out of the audience, proving that, oh, I scared you once, I can do it again. The other thing that I think ties these movies together is that they do build. You know bad shit's going to happen to these people, and they make you wait for it.
It's hard to use the term slow burn with these. It's very accurate, but I look at something like The Witch. That's a slow burn because you do have long moments where nothing really happens. In Midsommar and Hereditary, you also have those moments where nothing happens, but it goes quickly, and a lot of that is because in Hereditary, Toni Collette is putting on a masterclass in acting, and it's one of the best performances I've ever seen. In Midsommar, I'm not going to elevate Florence Pugh to that level of, oh, it's one of the best female performances of the last 10 or 15 years, but she's really, really good in this movie, and she does keep you involved. And Jack Rayner, everybody in it, the performances, it's a very well-paced slow burn, which slow burn's not an inaccurate term, but I feel like there might be a stigma with that, whereas even when stuff's not happening, it's a really fast, slow burn, if that makes any sense. It's a slow burn, but feels very, very well paced because I feel like he doesn't give you much time to get bored. And maybe that's because of the tension because in Hereditary, you know something bad's going to happen. Midsommar, you know at some point it's going to take a turn. Maybe it's just that anticipation makes that time in between things happening go quicker because you know it's coming and you know it's going to just happen and it's not really going to be telegrammed. So slow burn is 100% accurate, but any negative connotations you have when you hear slow burn, I don't think apply for either of his movies. And I think especially Midsommar, because you do have the color, you have the performances, you have the movement and everything to keep up with it. This just went up for rent last week at the time this goes up. So if you haven't seen it, watch it because, like I said, not knowing a bunch about it, it does help. But we might throw in some stuff. You know, when in a movie where there's only like three or four main events, we're probably going to mention at least one of them. So if you haven't seen it, pause this, watch it, and then come back. Just because I'd hate to spoil the experience for anybody because it is a really good movie to kind of go in blind. And I don't feel like we've spoiled anything yet.
No, I don't think
But so. I don't think we'll be able to keep that up for much longer.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. So we'll wait. We'll be here when you get back.
See you in about 103 minutes, roughly.
Or 171 if you watch the director's cut.
Oh, I didn't know there was.
Yeah.
I'll have to rent that.
Aster's working on the director's. I think it's already out.
147 is the theatrical.
Yeah,
release, so
I don't
was off on that.
I don't know if the versions that are available digitally to rent now are the DC or if you can get that. I want to say it's available in Europe for Blu-ray. Their release is going to be the director's cut. I don't know how we get it.
To kind of go back to that point, to where it's a slow burn, I just realized it's a 2.5 hour movie.
Yes.
Generally, if I sit through the theater for a 2.5 hour movie, it makes an impression. I saw Ad Astra just a few weeks ago. It was 2 hours and 3 minutes. And I left that thinking, man, that's a long movie. And when I think back to my experience watching Ad Astra, I will always think that's a long movie. It was only 2 hours and 3 minutes. Midsommar was 2.5 hours. But when I think back, I don't think back to a 2.5 hour long movie. I don't think about the time. That goes to show the pacing in this slow burn of a normally a 2.5 hour slow burn movie. You're going to feel it. I don't think you do in this.
No, and part of that, I think they do a good job of starting the movie, giving you some stuff to work with. You mentioned Toni Collette's performance. I think she does a fantastic job of starting at 1 and building to 11. Florence Pugh is almost the exact opposite.
She's thrown into 11 within 3 minutes.
Yeah, the night we meet her, she goes to 11. And
for good reason.
Yeah, absolutely. The rest of the movie is sort of her, I want to say, kind of coming down from that, being in a situation that's really just as traumatic.
In an unorthodox way.
Yeah.
Like in an unorthodox way. It's
she's somehow being able to cope with
maybe
this
not
tragedy by being a part of this other tragedy.
Yeah, like it's not, I wouldn't suggest it as a method of coping.
No, no, not healthy.
But it works for her, I think.
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean,
you don't really know.
She seems to be, she ends the movie with a smile on her face. She doesn't start it that way, so I guess her overall arc is better.
I mean, even just, that's such a credit. I'm glad you brought up the beginning, because I wasn't even thinking about that. But that's such a,
that's what I'm here for.
We talk about exposition. We talked about Jordan Peele, where in Us, there was a lot of exposition all at once. In the first, I may be exaggerated with 3 minutes, but in the first like 10 to 15 minutes of this movie, you get that she's kind of spastic and maybe an emotional drain in a relationship, that maybe she cries wolf a lot. You get that, but then you get why. And then she's not just crying wolf, the sky is falling. I think I mixed up my stories there, but whatever. The sky's actually falling this time, and the wolf is pulling it down. I don't, something like that.
Chicken but Little.
Is it all the same?
That's the sky that's falling. The boy that cried wolf is similar.
It's all the same thing.
Yeah, like, hey, the wolf is here eating
but
the sheep.
But in this one, like, you get, within that time, you get why she comes off as Chicken Little, and the reaction to, like, oh, it's happened this time. So just in that 10 minute, you get a good history of the relationship, even though you know that before she even has a scene with Jack Rayner, just from his scene with Will Poulter and the other friends. So you're building from that. And I think that's such a good, I wouldn't even call it a Jurassic Park tease, because it's not, you know, it's a long time until something else traumatic happens in this movie, but it's not a tease. This is what kicks off everything. This doesn't happen Does she go? I don't think so. She's there with her sister, and she has parents that she can hang out with in the summer. So, spoiler alert, it does such a good job of getting the ball going and still giving you all sorts of background at the same time, which is why he can take his time to get to the next point.
I think it is a challenging movie. I don't think it's an easy watch.
No, and I'll describe this the same way I'll describe Hereditary, where if you ask me, like, oh, have you seen Midsommar? Yeah, how was it? Loved it. Don't need to watch it again. That's how I described Hereditary. Yeah. But now that I know there's a director's cut, like, I kind of want to watch it again.
See the difference? Yeah. What we didn't get to see in the theater, which you didn't get to experience.
I don't need to see this movie again. It sat with me. Yeah. It has sat with me. And
I don't think there's an alternate ending.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I hope not. You know, it was a 2.5 hour movie, that, and it was released in the middle of the summer, like in midsummer.
July 3rd.
Yeah, which is ballsy.
4th of July weekend.
Yeah, because Hereditary came out June 8th, which I think that's a harder movie to sell in the middle of the summer, but I feel like this had hype from that, because I feel like people that saw, and I mean, $6 million opening, yeah, that doesn't sound like a lot, but for this kind of movie...
That's not the movie going experience people are expecting in July.
And I mean,
July.
Look at the top five of that. Those are the type of movies people are going to see. So for a studio to have the confidence to put this out then, I think is pretty impressive. I went and saw it, and I will try to go to early movies generally, especially in summer when you have 10 a.m. shows and noon shows. And this is one of those where I feel like I'm going to be the only one in the theater. I go to a theater that's not very busy.
Purposely.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
I agree. I do.
And there are very often times where I'm the only person in the theater. I thought this would be one of those times. It wasn't. Got in there by myself, and then a younger couple came in, maybe a little younger than me, and they sat a few rows up, and I thought, like, okay, just a couple and me, that's fine. And then an older couple walked in.
Uh-oh.
It was an older guy with two older ladies. It's one of those situations where you're immediately thinking, like, oh, they're in the wrong movie. Within 5 or 10 minutes, they're going to realize it and they're going to leave. And
they're not going to like where this goes.
What turned out happening, and this is another thing that goes towards giving it credit that it's a 2.5 hour movie. Generally, if you have somebody talking the entire time through a movie at your movie going experience,
and it's not the director on a commentary,
if it's
track.
2.5 hours long of people being dicks and talking through the movie, it'll make you remember that it's 2.5 hours long. They were there because in the, like, 60s or 50s, the guy who was there with two old ladies went to some kind of festival like this in college. So a lot of it was just, you know, as they...
He was checking it for accuracy.
Exactly. As they get there in the fields, he's like, oh, that's just how it is. There's just this wide open grass, and there's five people over here and six people over here. He's like, that's how it is before you get there. It's all these people that are kind of like... Get ready to get to it. And
on
like
acid.
Luckily, it was kind of a slow burn. It was good enough to talk in between parts where stuff is happening.
Oh, no, the Blood Eagle is much worse but when I did it.
But then as they get there, it's like, oh, it's exactly like that. Like you show up and there's all these people dressed the same and you immediately feel like an outsider, but they immediately make you feel like you belong. And like he's given this commentary that he lived through it. And then I'm just thinking like it's obnoxious. The younger couple that was in front of me, a couple of times the girl was like, would you just shut the F up? But then the best part, and this is where I talked about spoiling it, is when things take a turn and they realize what kind of festival they're at.
When it just goes over the cliff.
It goes over the cliff. There was just a real calm, like, that we didn't have that. it was so calm and just like... Like that they were wondering, like, oh, did people jump off a cliff? But then you get to dinner and it's like, oh, that's how dinners work.
Oh, yeah. The drugs, like, and the orgies. Yes.
he's like, oh, everybody was like that. And then, like, you know, the girl comes and pulls Will Poulter away. He's like, oh, you'd see that all the time. Like you would see somebody just grab somebody and leave and you don't know where they're going. It was just this running commentary of his experience, but not really acknowledging that they're watching a horror movie that's not supposed to be you reliving this time when you were 26, 27 in Sweden. So that was real interesting, but just that didn't happen at ours. Like that was just that. Like I think back to that because it's such a brutal, like, you know, it's coming and how it's done is so graphic
yes.
and brutal. And
it is shown and like, in every bit of it.
I'm literally on the edge of my seat with like both hands over my mouth. The girl is like clenched and like the guy next to her is like holding her thigh. We're real tense watching this. And then he's, yeah, that didn't happen at all. Such a cult. Like he was in a completely different movie. He was there to check it for accuracy. And eventually he kind of stopped during the orgies and stuff and the Jack Rayner pound party at the end. Like he didn't really comment much on that. I think it was maybe because he was with his, yeah, they might have been his sisters.
He didn't
want to
be like, I did, that did happen.
Yeah, like as it got crazier and crazier, I think he felt like he didn't have to chime in, that it was a little bit different for him as it got crazier. But man,
I didn't eat a woman's pubes.
Yeah, she didn't win me over. She didn't set a sex curse on me by sneaking her pubes into my stuff that he knows of.
That's true.
You get to that scene, and it's so brutal, and it's so graphic. It kind of sets the tone for like, oh, this is going to be an intense, like when stuff happens, it's going to be like the two other main characters that die pretty much.
Off screen.
Off screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, Will Poulter.
You can assume.
But at first, you don't really know. There's that air that maybe he's just doing. And I mean, even the boyfriend of the other couple, you'd think that it's going to be brutal, but then most of the deaths off screen. But I mean, it takes you places you don't expect it to go. Even when you go in expecting the unexpected, he does a good job of, you know, something bad's going to happen, but he still makes it shocking and unsettling.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go to any festivals in Sweden now. I'm glad that this other guy got to do it and had a good time, because he might think twice now. I certainly will.
There was a tweet about it that basically just said Midsommar was a remake of Willy Wonka, except the sins are too horny and PhD student, which it kind of is. That's what led to Will Poulter, and that's what led to Chidi. I wouldn't go to this festival personally.
No. Good luck on TripAdvisor Sweden.
I would think the first day would maybe be fun if you could bail right after without being hunted down and
or
killed.
Or blood eagled, yeah. That does seem to be the problem. One of the things that occurred to me while watching this movie, and as much as you think of Hereditary, I was sitting there thinking of The Wicker Man. Very much a movie about pagan beliefs and how they seem very, very different to an outsider. In Wicker Man, you have this Catholic, this devout Catholic, who when he's confronted with pagan beliefs, there's a scene where he's talking to Christopher Lee about, these women are jumping over a fire and they think that the fire god is magically going to impregnate them. Have they not heard of Jesus? And Christopher Lee, Lord Summer Isle, is like, well, Jesus himself was the product of a ghost pregnancy, was he not? That's one of the things I love so much about The Wicker Man, is how it just kind of makes you really think about being judgy about another culture.
That's something that I'm going to bring up in the Ready or Not episode. What you're saying is something I had on cue for that.
Oh,
yeah,
it's fantastic. How about that for a tease for our next episode?
You want to hear about shit knives and how they work with Ready or Not? Tune in next week.
Next week, big week. It's going to be our top five favorite final girls. It'll be, this is actually fascinating to me. Our number 10 through 6, I thought might be the first episode of Movies on Up history that really ever ends with a cliffhanger. It's a cliffhanger you know the outcome of, but it does feel like that should be a two-part episode. Now I guess we're doing that with this. Two different movies, and I bridged them with a third completely different movie. So I guess we have two-parters to finish up.
You would
October.
Almost think we communicated when it came to doing episodes.
Oh, we don't
to
do
like
that.
Plan that, but no, that was all organic. So tune in next week to see how I tie shit knives to Ready or Not.
I'm fascinated.
Samara Weaving and Adam Brody from this year.
I cannot wait. I wish that I could find out right now, but you have to wait till next week. Until then,
keep it up.